Yeah, talking about eufy.com. The Eufy video lock is unbelievable. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at Best Buy stores starting on May 20th. What is it? It's a smart lock, 2K cam, and doorbell, 3-in-1, triple security, so you can have everything you need in one device rather than install many pieces on your front door. It's not just for security, but also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys like my wife. You can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated camera. It's easy to install and set up with just a Phillips head screwdriver, no drilling required. It's got a keyless entry. No more fumbling for the keys. When hands are full, never worry about kids losing keys or passing among the renters of your house. You got a rental property out there, this is a must-have. I love this product. Just got it a couple weeks ago. Huge fan. Have the Ring camera. It's okay. It's not as great as this, so I swapped it out. Go to Eufy Video Lock today on YouTube. That's EUFY Video Lock, or visit EUFYOfficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your front door.
Welcome to Drinking Bros. Put down the water and grab a fucking drink.
Oh! Who do we have here? Who do we have here?
Rocco.
Is it just you? Is it just Rocco? Is it just the man behind the chin tonight?
It's man behind the chin part duo.
Oh, I love it. What is that? What is that going off in the background? A microwave?
We got that's Gaines, bro.
Is that Gaines, bro? You got Gaines heating up? Are you at Matt Bass's house right now?
Yeah. So he's actually helped me with a lot of the supplementation of food.
Is he really?
You want a body like that, motherfucker? You got to eat like that, motherfucker.
I hear you. You know how this works, Rocco. We got some sponsors. First up, we've got HavenLock.com.
Yeah.
You want to feel safe at night? You want your family to feel safe? Go to HavenLock.com. They've got a device called the Haven Mech, which it's essentially the world's strongest deadbolt for your door. Typically, it takes about 3 kicks to kick in a door. This, with the Haven Mech, it takes more than 50. Yeah, that's right. It takes 50 fucking kicks to get through a door. By that point, you've been loaded up with Tartarus. You know what time it is. It'd be easy to take down an intruder. So if you care about your family, if you care about your friends and your loved ones, or just your visitors or in-laws sleeping at your house, why don't you get yourself a Haven Mech for the door? Go to HavenLock.com, type in the promo code Drinkin' Bros, and you get a special one-time offer of this lock for just $99. The fucking thing's amazing. I've got one. It's incredible. We're big fans. Look, they're veteran owned. They're out of Nashville, Tennessee, and they got started on a Kickstarter, raised over $100,000. So everybody else is in on the jam, in on the action of Haven Lock. Grab yourself a Haven Mech. Next up, we got it's one of our faves, one of our fan faves. StrikeForceEnergy.com. The tastiest little energy drinks in all the land. They come in a little tiny tin pouch. They're good in waters. They're good in sodas. They're good in liquor. You name it. You can put your energy drink inside of it. Kick the can. You don't need a fucking can anymore. No.
Fuck the can. Fuck
that can. Cut a hole in that can. Fuck that can. Because you don't need it anymore. Throw it in the dumpster. Throw it in the fucking dumpster. Go to StrikeForceEnergy.com. For all your energy drink needs, I gotta be honest with you. We take it pre-workout, after-workout. We love it. Huge fans. Type in the promo code Drinkin' Bros. You get 20% off of every order. They have subscriptions. We each have a subscription. It comes right to our house. We don't have to fucking think about it anymore. And they also ship anywhere in the entire world. So if you're stationed somewhere and you're like, how do I get Strike Force? I don't, will they ship to Iraq? Yes, they will, dude. Yes, they fucking will.
No way.
Type in the promo code Drinking Bros. You get 20% off of every order at StrikeForceEnergy.com. We love those guys. Look, we love all our sponsors because they've been with us for the long haul. And that's including TartarusOrdnance.com. That's TartarusOrdnance, a.k.a. I wish a motherfucker would.
I love that, man.
Oh, so do I. So do I. So for all your home defense ammunition needs, all your firearms needs, go to TartarusOrdnance.com. Type in the promo code Drinking Bros. You get 10% off of every order, and that's including firearms. Like, firearms are expensive. They're expensive.
They are. No joke.
I can't believe Tartar's Ordnance is offering 10% off of every order. Like, that's a big boy move right there. That's a move that could almost bankrupt your company. Like, especially with our audience. Like,
Kenny's
everybody's
crazy,
buying
man.
Shit.
I know. Crazy,
I know. Kenny Gunter. Big fan of Kenny. Big fan of Tartarus. It's where we get all our shit. That's where we all pew-pew to. So go to TartarusOrdnance.com and type in the promo code Drinking Bros. Again, 10% off of every single order. And the same with our next sponsor, WarFighterTobacco.com.
Yes, those are my boys right
Hell
there.
Hell yeah,
man.
They are. God damn it, we love Warfighter.
If we did this outside, I'd be smoking a cigar the whole time.
Dude, for real. Absolutely for fucking real. Go to WarFighterTobacco.com for the finest cigars in all of the land. They're made with Cuban seeds, hand-rolled from the Dominican Republic. They're the best cigars you will ever smoke. Rocky, you smoke them all the time.
Yeah. Right now, my favorite is the 556, but we're slowly going to pull out the Rocco brand soon, and we're going to try and get that one going soon. But right
I
now, 556,
wait.
That is my favorite, dude. It's
dude,
smooth.
I can't wait. I hope your head is on the fucking...
That's the thing is, I wasn't sure if I wanted to put my own face on it because I feel
Why not? It'd be awesome.
It's egotistical, but we might actually do it. I think the guys want that. So.
If you could smoke yourself, dude, there's no greater feeling in this world. That's what I've heard. That's what Marilyn Manson said.
If I could suck my own dick, then I'd do it too.
Look, kids, go to warfightertobacco.com for the tastiest, finest cigars in America, and also they're 100% combat veteran owned, so
they do not play.
Type in the promo code Drinking Bros. You get 10% off of every order. Last but not least, we've got the greatest piece of literature in American history. At Night She Cries While He Rides His Steed, the first ever romance novel for dudes. Rocco, can I get a horse noise? Can I get a horse noise?
I can't do it like Matt does.
Nah,
so
you sound like a young secretariat. I love it. I love it. I really do. I appreciate your enthusiasm.
And I tried.
Your energy. I love your secretariat energy. If you like The Writing in Range 15, you will love this book. If you like Airplane, Blazing Saddles, Scary Movies, all of that shit, you're looking at A Night She Cries While He Rides His Steed. It's sex, guns, violence. It is available everywhere. Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, every bookstore except for Walmart, and Audible.com, where I did the voice. You can pick it up now and enjoy the shit out of your weekends. Grab it, Night She Cries While He Rides His Steed. Tonight's, it is just me and Rocco. This is a one-on-one show. We've done this in the past. Rocco and I have done this in the past. Done in the past with Matt. I've done it in the past with Jared. Looking forward to doing it with other people. Sean Mattson from Strike Force Energy. We've done it with a lot of people, and it's a big deal. It goes over well. Everybody seems to love it. And tonight we have Rocco. And you were at a different stage in your life than last time we did this together. I really wanted to sit down and talk with you personally tonight, without the rest of the boys. Not that we don't love them, because we do love them, but you're in an interesting spot in life where a lot of people in their life are probably there right now. They don't want to admit it. They don't talk about it publicly. But you are, and since you're speaking all around the world and you're helping people all the time, I thought it'd be great to sit down and chat with you tonight. So I appreciate you doing this.
No, for sure, man. I think it's important. I think, that's a big part of why a lot of guys can associate with us is that we really don't have much to hide in our lives. And so, you know, everyone goes through hardship, and, you know, I'm going through mine right now. And
if you can, could you explain it to the audience what you're going through? Because, you know, we know it personally because we're all best friends. But I think a lot of the people at home don't.
Yeah. So recently I went through a divorce. You know, it's all finalized and everything now is done. And so, you know, you go through, you know, you don't get married to get divorced. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
so
yeah.
To find out that things weren't what you thought they were, and then you had to go to the further extent and finally finalize a divorce with someone that you believed was going to do, you know, was going to be there for the rest of your life, you know, that someone that fit really well with my family. And it turns out it just didn't work, you know? And so, I'm not here to, I don't point fingers. I don't blame nothing. And I don't drop my drama too much on there, but at the same time, it's like, you know, my life went from everything I thought was perfect to it obviously wasn't. And so, you know, now I am a single father of four kids living in El Paso and trying to juggle business, trying to juggle my personal life, trying to juggle their personal life of the kids and sports school and everything else that comes associated with that. So, that's where I'm at in life, man. It's definitely not where I expected I was going to be. It's not where I wanted to be. I'm the guy that grew up in a household where family was everything and then grew up knowing that I wanted to have kids and I wanted a family, dude. And so I've been trying to have that for so many years and it just kept falling apart in my hands. And it's funny when someone goes through divorce, I don't think you realize that you feel like the failure. You know what I mean? It's so,
yeah. And your parents have been together for a long time, correct?
Oh yeah. They've been together for a long time. Man. Definitely. I can't tell you how many, I know it's probably 35 years plus. That's what I think it's at. I think it's 35 years plus.
Sure. But I think why this is important to highlight is a lot of people at home, you know, their parents have been together for a long time. This generation, goes through a lot of divorce and, you know, it's, I don't want to say easy because it's not when you're in it, but it seems like it from the outside world. But once you actually are in it, like you are right now, is there some form of kind of shame almost of like, you don't want to tell your parents, you don't want to tell the rest of your family about it?
You know how hard that call was, man. So here's the thing, man. So I knew at one point, like, you know, I found out what I found out and I decided, okay, well, this is not healthy for me. It's not healthy for the kids. It's just not. It's not conducive to the lifestyle that I want to live. And so, you know, we decided, you know, she decided to go back to home for her and you know, obviously continue on my life. And then at one point I questioned it, man, because just like you said, we're in a society now, it's very easy to get divorced.
Yeah.
And so I said, you know what? Fuck this, man. I'm like, you know, maybe I can accept what happens. I can forgive and I can move on and we can just continue just trying to have this life that I've already grown accustomed to for 4 years now, you know? And it took me 1 week to identify, like, you know what? I think I deserve better. I think the kids deserve better. I think we can do more than. I just felt like I was never going to be happy in the situation that I was, and this was kind of like, okay, well, it's time to walk, you know. And so, I was proud of myself for making that second effort, and it wasn't easy, trust me, because there's still so much anger inside of me. But I made the effort, you know. I made the effort to try and do the right thing, and I kept trying to hold on to this thought process where it's like, you know what, in our society, it's so easy to walk away and I want to fight. I'm going to fucking fight for this shit.
Sure.
And then eventually I realized, you know, it wasn't worth the fight. You know, I think there's so much more out there. You know what I mean? And so I decided to go ahead and go through with the divorce and the divorce is now final and, you know, and it's crazy, man. To make the call and tell my mom what was going on was embarrassing. It was like, okay, hey, mom, here's my second divorce.
Were your parents supportive?
As good parents are, man. You know, my mom told me, like, you got to make sure it's it. If you gonna do it, you don't want to mess with the kids. And, you know, the parents gave their portion of parenting. And, you know, and my father's more on the rough side. And my mother's more on the, like, reality side. You know, my father's more like, well, fuck it, do your thing, you know, because he's a man and he believes I should be happy, and, you know, he don't forgive nobody, you know. And then my mom's on the side like, well, make sure, you know, you're gonna be happy with the decision in the end and blah 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 blah, blah, you know. And so they do what parents do, you know, the good cop bad cop side of things. And embarrassing as hell, man. Embarrassing as hell, you know. But they also know this isn't the first time I've been through this, you know, a very similar situation. And so
you know, we got through it, dude. And as a family, the kids are so damn strong, man. They've been through so much. And I think the blessing was that I am more connected with my kids now, and I identify things that I did wrong enough in my recent marriage where I kind of separated myself from the family because I identified that they had another figure that was taking care of them and meant that I can back off a little bit, you know, as a father, and I could focus more on the career. And, you know, again, identify faults in my ways. And now I'm just trying to be a better father. I'm trying to be, you know, when my next relation comes around, I'm trying to make sure I don't lose that connection with my kids just because I feel like it's, you know, that I can. So it's just so many things. It's a learning process, man. It's a learning process. And definitely, I don't know, have all the answers, but I know that, you know, we got through it. Yeah, the family, you know, me and my four kids, we got through it, and we're on to the next chapter.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this. What was it like waking up the morning after the divorce was finalized and realizing, oh, shit, it's me and four kids all alone. What do I do now? Was there a panicked feeling? Did you feel a sense of calm? Was it hard? Is it still hard to get used to right now?
I mean, it's been about close to 6 months now, man. So, like, I tell you what, that crazy, scary feeling was day one after she moved out, right? That empty bed, that space, that void in the bed that's there now, you know, that there's no more warmth and comfort, and there's not someone to hold at night, you know, someone to give you affection. Like, dude, that's fucking hard to get over. I think that was the hardest thing, was that affection, was having someone there. Whether it's for sex, whether it's for emotions, whether it's just for the camaraderie or just the partnership of just hanging out with someone, you know?
Right.
That was difficult as fuck, man. And you can't fill that. You can't fill that void with a text message to someone across the fucking state. You can't fill that with a FaceTime with some other friend you have. There's no other filling that void unless you fill it with another woman. And that's the sad part, is that what I tried to do early on. I tried to jump right to another relationship to try and fill that void, which was the worst thing I could have done.
Yeah, that never works. That never works.
No, it didn't work because I was giving her this empty emotion where I believed, like, okay, this is cool, this is right, this is perfect. And then waking up one day and being like, holy shit, I'm going to hurt this girl. I'm going to break this girl's heart because I know deep in my heart, this ain't right either. I don't want none of these motherfuckers. Like, this woman was a sweetheart, a good person, and she actually fit pretty well to the family. But I also know deep in my heart, this is not a woman that I want to continue on a relationship with, because it's, for some reason, there's things that just wasn't connecting in my heart. And so when I had to break it to that woman, I guess essentially I let her on that, I, you know, and that's the worst thing. I say that and I'm like, ugh. Like a complete asshole, but like in reality, I didn't identify that. I thought I was doing it. I thought I really wanted to be a part of this girl's life. I thought I wanted her to be a part of my life. And then I identified later, like, fuck, man, I was just trying to fill that space or that void that I was missing from a 4-year relationship with a woman that, you know, I gave everything to, you know? And so it was hard, man. It was so fucking hard. I tell you right now, like, I think now it's been months now, and now I'm able to say that I'm good. I'm comfortable in my empty bed. You know what I mean? I'm comfortable in that space. My house is the way it is because of the way I leave it and the way I make it. And so now I'm comfortable in my space. And I think it'd be actually really hard now to allow someone into that space because I'm so comfortable in what I create, you know?
Right.
It's wild, man. So it's a weird, weird place to be in. But now, like I said, I think I'm comfortable in my space that I've created for myself in the past couple of years. So.
What about being a single parent, though, to four kids? That's got to be demanding, no matter who you are. How do you juggle business, four children on your own with no help? And, you know, because, look, you have Article 15. You have, I mean, look, you have a lot.
Last thing is whiskey.
Podcasts, like all of it.
Dude, I tell you what. So I was a single parent before. And then I met my ex-wife who I married and obviously recently divorced. So I was a single parent before. I had to relearn it, man. I had to relearn scheduling. I had to relearn how to cook dinner again, because I used to be a good cook. I just haven't done it. My kids actually forgot that I used to cook for them, and they were like, yeah,
really?
Yeah, because I haven't been cooking this whole time, dude. My ex-wife did everything when it comes to the household side of the house. So they were like, Dad, you know how to cook. And the first meal I made was spaghetti because it's easy as fuck, right? And they were just like, that's really good. It's like, yeah, because I know how to cook, you know, jerk. Really? Come on, man. You know?
But but at least that's a small victory. You got to feel like that's a right. cool feeling
that's,
of like, all right.
Exactly. It's yeah. cool. So far, there hasn't been anything I've cooked that they didn't like. You know what I mean? So
good. Good.
Yeah, I have a strong connection with, I know what the hell they like. But so I kind of structure my meals throughout the week of what they like. But at the same time, I'm healthy and easy to make. But it was tough, dude. It was tough to get back into a routine. That's why I tell people, like, how are things? Like, when I get texts from family members, I'm like, how are things going? You know, like, my answer is like, good. I have my life organized again. And that's what it is. It's getting back onto a routine that fits for these kids, whether it's, you know, like, because now business kind of takes a slight back seat. And it's unfortunate because that's something I really do pride myself on, as being part of this Article 15, Lead Cinders, Black Rock Coffee, everything that we were associated with. I have a lot of pride in what we do and being a part of it. But at the same time, like, my friends know, you know, like, Jared and Matt understand the circumstances. It's not easy for me to pick up and move. It's not easy for me to schedule things like podcasting. You know, that's why I've been missing from the podcast for the past few weeks, is because of the fact that there's things that took priority in my life that I had to get situated. The kids are starting school. The kids are starting sports. The divorce took, you know, had to get, it took precedence in my life. And so all these things, once I've got everything organized, now, you know, I can show up on a podcast because I have shit situated, you know, and is it easy? Fuck no, man. You know how stressed I get about, dude, the other day I went to a father-son fucking lunch and it was great, but at the same time, it's like, I know there's work to be done throughout the day, but I take that time because I know it's important, because right now they don't have that mother figure, and so I kind of have to step up in that role as the parent.
Yeah, and it, you know, with these kids at the ages they're at in their life, like, there is no going back. So if you're not there for them now, you can't go back and get that time back.
Bro, you have no idea. Like, so my oldest, oh man, we were going to talk about this. Like, meaning we talked about, like, you were asking about dating my daughter dating and shit, because she's 13, turning 14.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do I feel about that? I'm like, oh god, that's a fucking book I can write about. How do I feel about that? You know? But
because privately before the show started, we were talking about this earlier. You had posted something on Instagram earlier about your daughter and her getting her hair done and all that stuff, and it's like, she's a pretty girl. She's a young girl. And now you're going to have to be going through that as a dad, where other gentlemen are going to be asking her to dances and things like that. Like, all of that's got to factor in your mind as well, where you're like, oh shit, I'm on my own on this one. Is that crazy for you?
It's a trip, man. It's like, you know, I've been handed these deck of cards, and you just kind of like play with them the way you fucking kind of naturally figure out how to do it. Like, there's no answer. Like, you know, when people hand you kids, they don't say, like, here's the right way to do it, wrong way.
Yeah.
And so it's like, now it's like, okay, you're the single father of fucking two girls that are in the preteens, and one, you know, when I got Belle, she didn't have her period yet, right? And so then all of a sudden she has that. As the dad, I'm like, I'm having to explain to my fucking daughter how to handle that situation. And we're just like,
boy, as a dad, that's tough.
Right, as a father. And so you understand where our relationship's taking the turn, where I'm mother dad. You know what I mean? From already have been that for the past 4 years, you know, and I've kind of called my mom obviously for all the information. I called my sister's like, what's the appropriate way to kind of handle the situation? So I got my help from my family. But like, I've been mother dad or Mr. Mom for so many years now that now, dude, she's talking to me about the boys, dude. She's talking to me about a boy that she likes and another girl's flirting with him.
Holy shit.
Like, how do you think that fucking feels, bro? And I have to shut down the ego. I have to shut down the dad mode and be like, okay, so now what, right? And I even asked her, like, babe, why do you tell me all this? She goes, this is the most heartbreaking words that have ever come out of this girl's mouth that fucking destroyed me that night. She goes, that I have no one else to talk to.
Oh, and dude, man.
Fuck. Yeah, imagine that shit. You're 13, your teenage daughter turned 14 now, going into the life where it's like the scariest parts of her life where fucking boys are going to try and fucking do everything they goddamn can to fucking conquer that quest. And it's like, and she's in the middle of confusion of like, you know, when's sex, all this shit is just, dude, I know what that age is like because we've all fucking been there, and I know how we've all been our life. And so it's the scariest time. And the one person she can go to relate to, try and talk to and fucking vent, is fucking me, bro. Holy fuck.
And by the way, for the audience, we should point out that, like, there is no shared custody. All four kids are yours, so that's it, right?
Yeah, all four kids that live with me all the time.
Yeah.
And that's
because a lot of parents who are divorced, they get a break, either on the weekends or the summers or whatever the custom.
Yeah, this was the first summer they've actually went with their birth mother in about 3.5, almost 4 years, and for 30 days. And so that was scary enough for me. That's why I didn't go on the USO tour that the boys did, because I wanted to stay in country to make sure everything
sure.
was fine.
Yeah.
And so there's no financial help. There's a FaceTime call here and there for their mother. And again, so if their mother was associated with her on FaceTime, but she still comes to me, but the boys are like, you see the difference in like the situation that I have here. It's like, I'm Mr. Mom. I'm mom and dad. I'm everything there is and everything in between.
But I will say this, by all accounts, you know, and look, you share a lot of your personal life on social media, which is why so many people love you. Your kids seem to love you, and they seem like they're having a great time all the time with dad. So, you know, one of the main things of this episode was a lot of people asked me, hey, man, it'd be great if you sat down with Rocco and talk about what a great dad he was. Because everybody always comments on, man, he's like an awesome dad. It would be great to hear just a personal side to him about, you know, what kind of dad he is, how he gets through the day-to-day life and things like that.
Trips me out, man.
Yeah.
I think that concept trips me out, though, Ross. Like you call me a great dad? Like my father was a great dad, right? Like, my father was... But I would even say this. I would go as far as saying, like, my father was just a dad. My father was a dad, right? Like, I wouldn't say he's great. He was just doing what his job was.
Right.
And I think currently now, I'm just doing what my job is. Like, that's what a dad does. It's kind of sad to know that people look at me as a great dad and not just a dad doing his dad duty. Right,
here's my feeling on it, because I'm a dad as well. I don't think you know while you're going through it if you're good or bad. I think every day feels like it's a balancing act, and I don't think you know how great of a job you did until after your kids are grown and raised.
I agree.
To go back and to judge of whether or not you were a good or a bad father. Because I've known, you know, look, I knew kids when I was earlier that they turned out to be shitty people when they were older.
Right. And you never know.
Yeah, you don't. And vice versa. And it can always, you can always attribute it back to your parents and how you were raised. And I don't think you'll know now. But look, by all accounts, you seem like you're doing a great job on social media and everybody loves you. And so I think everything's okay now, and I think your kids will be fine. But you won't know until they're 30, where it's like,
yeah, right, well, I have no idea until my two kids are in prison, my two boys are in prison. It's funny, man, because you know exactly what you said, like what you see on social media, like, you know, that's exactly like, you don't think that video, I just edited a video of my son teaching him how to ride his bike, and dude, what a blessing of a fucking day to be there for that, and for him to actually fucking learn how to ride while I'm recording. It was like, oh,
it's amazing. Yeah.
This is perfect for social media. This is perfect for me. This is perfect for everything, right? I sent it to his grandma. I sent it to both grandmas, both grandmas. So it was a good time. But the funny thing is, like, you don't see the other in betweens. Like,
no, him falling over a thousand times. Yeah. Right.
And I'm grabbing him. I'm like, hey, I'm scared. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's times when I'm like, I'm on him. Like, bro, figure it out. It ain't that hard. Like, just like what you see on film is like, that's good shit. I didn't edit out, right? You know what I mean? I edited out a lot of me yelling at the kid, like, come on, bro, what are you doing? You know what I mean? Let's be real. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a dad. I'm a father like everyone else. Like,
yeah, you're a man. You're a guy's guy. Yeah.
I'm a guy's guy. God,
and exactly. I'm the same way, where it's like, all right, let's figure the fuck out. And then usually the mom is the one who steps in and is like, no, yeah, they're a child. You got to do this and this and this.
Right. That's why I have my 13-year-old. My 13-year-old turned 14. She's standing up there like trying to calm me down. I'm like, hey, knock it off.
Yeah. Knock it the fuck off. All right.
Yeah.
Oh, geez, man. So let me ask you this. What's it like dating with four kids? Has that been weird?
Yeah, man. So here's the thing I know.
Do you use like apps like Tinder and things like that?
No, dude. I did that before. And it's funny because I feel like everyone's just as crazy, you know. So it's just like, it doesn't work. I decided this time, like, I didn't want to meet anyone outside of inside of the Article 15 circle. I would like to meet someone outside of that. But before that, you know, I did it. She had three kids, And it's like, holy shit. Like, I know this. I was married to a woman that didn't have kids. I feel like part of the disconnection, part of the issue that we had was the fact that she didn't understand kids. You know, she can definitely have kids if she wants to. So it wasn't that the issue. It was just she didn't have kids. And so I felt like she didn't understand the affection and the love I have for kids. Like, the right. depth I would go for my fucking kid, people don't get unless they have kids, right? There's this.
Oh, yeah, yeah, 100%. Because it's not right. theirs. Because if the child is not theirs, you don't care. And look, even I'm guilty of this, where it's right. like there'll be other kids around with my kid, and it's just like, all right, great. I don't care what you're doing, but I care about my kid.
Right. And yeah. so I felt that disconnect this whole marriage. And so I knew early on, like, man, it's uncomfortable. Either I'm gonna have to give this woman a kid, or this isn't gonna work. You know. And so now I know, like, I will not date someone that doesn't have kids unless they have, you know, a medical condition where they couldn't have kids themselves, and they can take on mine as their own, and hopefully, you know, they can love them just as much as I do, blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? So I dated a girl with three kids, and then it's funny because, you know what's even harder is the fact that some people don't raise kids the same way I raise kids.
No, no. And then you got to get used to that. None of that, but you're adding three to four. You're more than right. a Brady Bunch at that point. You're too shy of a starting baseball team.
Dude, there's no cars that fit nine, bro.
No, no.
Or you get a van. And I told myself at a young age, I'm never driving a fucking van.
Yeah, I mean, even one of those you know, triple Suburbans with the three-row seating isn't going to fit those fuckers. So
no, dude. So the girl I'm talking to now, she has two kids. She's got her own job. She's got her own house. She's got her own life. And she's in a whole different city. And so we have no other option but to take things slow and see where it goes. But the cool thing is that the identification that she has with kids is very similar to mine. And the way she wants to raise kids is very similar to mine. You know, I told her, I said, look, I'm very stern in my household. She goes, that's good. My father was a TI. Her father was a TI in the Air Force years ago. And I was like, well, I'm a drill sergeant in the Army. So, like, when you find someone that has the same kind of, like, ideas of how to raise kids, well, then it makes the whole thing like, okay, well, then there's a chance here.
Right.
But it's the other side of the house when you see someone that's like very lenient with the kids and stuff that I can't handle. Like, dude, there's no way it's going to work because I'm going to be fucking miserable because my four kids do not embarrass me in public. I snap my fingers and they fucking stop whatever the fuck they're doing, right? Because it's just the upbringing that they've had. And when someone raises kids differently than me, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying it's different. Well, then it doesn't fit in my space. You know what I mean? And so if you don't fit in my space, I'm never going to be happy.
I know. It's not. It's never going to work. It's never going to work. Because the way people raise their kids, they take it very seriously. So
they do.
You don't want anybody else coming in and talking to your kids a different way and vice versa.
Right.
So
we're so set in our ways in my household. We're so set in my ways. You know what I mean? So it's like, no one's coming in here and trying to change my ways.
Yeah, that's where it gets really tricky. But let me ask you this. Did you ever see a counselor or anyone who said, hey, you've had two marriages, let's back off and let's wait a while on your next relationship?
Yeah, man, that's
did
funny.
You really?
So, yeah, I did. So the same counselor I saw for PTSD, and I was having, you know, some issues I had there, I called her, man, and I was feeling like, dude, I actually was starting to feel like, man, what is wrong with me, dude? Because I feel like I'm doing good things, right? Like, and we'll talk about this later on when we talk about looking in the mirror. But it's like, I feel like I was doing everything right, and I still got shit on. And so it was really fucked with my head, man. And then you start going through that lonely phase, and you start going through pretty much the early phases of sleeping alone and all the other stuff. And so I said, hey, Tanya, man, we need to talk, you know? And this is my counselor. Her name is Tanya Glenn, and what an amazing woman. And you can find her online. She's just done some epic shit with PTSD and stuff like that. So she's the first one that came to me early on and really kind of changed my mind on the counseling side of things with PTSD. And so I was like, you have a second time. And dude, I haven't talked to her. I haven't reached out to her in probably 4 years. I said, Tanya, it's Vince. I was like, I kind of need a minute to talk to you sometimes. She goes, give me a call. So I called her and I broke down the whole situation, right? And she's like, oh man, I'm so sorry to hear that, blah, 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 blah. And so we're going back and forth, and she's doing her little, you know, she's kind of reading it, and she's telling me her version of what she sees and thinks and blah, 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 blah. And then she goes, listen, do me a favor. You need to take 6 months to a year off. Six months to a year without any serious dating. Like, do not move anyone in. Do not get 100% involved with anyone for 6 months to a year. And so this was, man.
I actually like that. I believe in that theory, by the way.
This was in May, early June. I'd say May would probably be more late May. And so when she told me that, and so I kind of held on to that. I was like, man, that's good. She explained why. She explains all the things like, you know, your body isn't over it. You don't want to carry on the drama that you had in your last relationship. You don't want to carry to the next one. Like all the insecurities, all the doubts, all the disbeliefs, all that shit you don't want to carry on to the next relationship. And there's no way you would just want to jump right into another one, dude, because it's just, like I said, you carry all the baggage you had from your last relationship to that one, thinking that the same one is going to do the same fucking hurt, right? You don't want that.
Right.
And so, okay, I've listened to her, and I haven't taken, you know, there's it. I'm doing everything I can to follow that motto because I do trust her and I believe in her. But you know what the funny thing was? Is I asked her about my ex-wife. I said, listen, here's the situation, blah, blah, blah. Do you think... Because I was fighting, I told you I was fighting for it. I thought like, you know, everyone gives up on shit so fast. I'm gonna go and fight for it. So do you think I should continue to keep fighting? Right? Because this is the second time I've already like walked away, and I thought like, it's hard, man. When you work with someone for so long, man, you know them so well. It's very hard to walk away and just kind of
cold absolutely, again. Absolutely.
And she was like, listen, you're never gonna trust that woman ever again. And she goes, you can get counseling for years, and you never know if it was gonna be enough to fix her. Do you want to live like that? I was like, no. And she was like, okay then. She goes, you think that's healthy for the kids? And I was like, no. She goes, okay then. So then you know your answer. I was like, fuck. Fucking Tanya. God damn it. You're right. That was honestly the closure I needed to know from, like, my mom said the same thing. My dad said the same thing. My sisters. Everyone said the same fucking thing. It didn't matter to me, dude. When I heard it from a fucking doctor, you know what I mean? When I heard it from the official source, that's when it was for me. It was like, okay. She's right. Everyone else is right. But this is like the valid educational fucking answer.
So, yeah. So were there rules like along with it? What did she say? Look, no sex with anybody, no hooking up with anybody.
No, you don't even know this chick. She's so dope, dude. She's like, look, have fun. Do whatever the fuck you want to do. Have fun. But nothing serious. And when she means have fun, she's talking like, go ahead and fuck whoever. Go and fucking date. Go out and fucking dance, drink, do whatever the fuck you want. She's saying just don't commit to something serious too soon because you're just going to carry over baggage. And and if you know her, she's just all about like, she'll be real, man. She's real. And that's the thing, as I knew what she was saying, she was like, have fun, dates, fucking meet other women, do your thing. You know, and that's how she's saying it. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, I knew what she meant, you know? And so, and that was a cool thing about it. Like, that's probably the realest answer you're going to get from any other counselor. Just like, do your thing. Just don't overcommit to anything too soon because you're not ready.
I think there is some validity in that where it's because you can, you know, kind of get attached too early maybe. And then also bringing, you know, other people into to meet your kids and things like that. Like that starts to get dangerous on a level where it's like, all right.
Yeah. Great. Well, that was the thing. That's what I did. And I told you, after my divorce, I kind of jumped in right into a smaller relationship that I thought was, I thought I was ready for it, and it turned out I wasn't. And so what I ended up doing, you know, the kids ended up meeting her a little bit, you know, and they met her, dude. And then at the same time, you know, we met her kids, and we all kind of got clicked really quick because kids are kids. They get along very easily and this and that. And then,
what do the kids think about her as a mom initially?
This girl?
Yeah.
Dude, here's the fucking sad part, dude. My youngest one, who is 7, he's looking for mom. Like, he wants
someone
to identify as mom. And so, so there was one of the days where he was like, can you turn the TV on for me? And she goes and does it. And then Hunter tells her, like, my older son, he goes, hey, don't have to do that for you. He goes, why not? She's going to be my future mom. And I was like, fuck.
Oh, right? Like, boy.
He doesn't understand. He just knows that dad has another woman in the household right now who's hanging around, spending significant amount of time in the house. He identifies that, well, that's his next mother. And so I felt like...
Was that a gut punch?
Yeah, man. That was one of those things like, I don't want to do that. Because he identified his stepmom, the one I just recently got divorced, as mom for so long. Like, that woman's been raising for years. And so he knew her as mom. And so... when we first split up, that was probably the hardest thing I heard was, he's like, mom, hey, dad, where's mom? And I was like, holy shit, I'm about to start crying right now, lock myself in the room in the fucking shower and just bawl my eyes out because how heartbreaking that this guy, he identifies her as mom and she's no longer around. Like, dude, You don't think I think this kid already needs counseling because of that? Like that really, that was really like so heartbreaking as known. And then a month and a half later, I have another girl in the household who's just really cool and she's taking care of us. And like when I was out of town, she'd be watching the kids and the kids were getting close with her. And so I really, fuck. And so then when the counselor tells me she takes it, I know why. Like, yeah, man, I just kind of fucked my own kids over for a second, didn't I? And dude, sad truth, man. That's like I'm saying this right now, and I feel like a complete asshole saying it out loud.
I don't think I've ever said it out loud,
but it's like, that was probably the worst decision I ever could have made. And not because the woman was not a bad decision. The woman was a good person. It was just jumping right into something just to help me get over the last relationship was the worst thing I could have done for myself and for the kids.
And for the kids, yeah, because it's confusing for the kids. So where are you at right now in life and, you know, as far as dating and that stuff goes?
So, you know, I have a girl that I talk to in you know, all Kansas City. I mean, she lives in San Antonio. I live here. You know what I mean? But, you know, if things keep going the way they are, you know, I'm definitely going to give that the serious.
But you're going to wait a while, right? You're going to wait a while.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm just going to, there's like how serious can I take it? She's in San Antonio. Dude. But at the same time, she's a good person. Everything about her is perfect, you know, but you know, I need to do what's right by my kids and let them understand who I am. And they need to see me as a single father, being able to manage my situation alone.
Absolutely.
Without having to have a woman in there just trying to kind of enable me. You know what I mean? And so that's my goal. My goal right now is to just let the kids see me be me. You know, see dad run the household, make sure everything's going good, and see that I don't need anyone else to keep this family together. You know what I mean? And so when they identify that and they see that and I feel really comfortable with that, you know what I mean? I can take this relationship to another level, you know, and then I want to. It's just I know that right now they're not ready for it.
Too early. It's too early right now, yeah.
That's what it is. And so you know, and I'm not the type, you know, as many people think like, oh my God, I should get all kinds of pussies. Like, dude, I'm not the dude that jumps around like that. It's just never been in my character. It's just not the type of person I am. And I don't intend to ever turn into that. You know, it's just I focus on what I feel is right, you know, and my family, my kids are right, you know, business is right, you know, my writing is getting better because when you go through hardship, you tend to have more emotions, and writing seems to be really deep and good right now. And, you know, and the person that entertains my mind is the girl that I'm talking to in San Antonio, and so I'm going to keep it that way.
Yeah, and I wanted to touch on this too. Like, you've been doing a ton of transitional speeches. I'm sure that's got to help, right? Because it's
time I do it, it's therapeutic, dude.
Yeah, because it's not all about you anymore, where it's about other people. So how has that been going? And I know you were at Texas A&M. And I know you're super passionate about it, and you're great at it. People love you. They love your speeches. They hit us up all the time on a Drinking Bros podcast page on Facebook. How exciting is that in your life right now?
I think that's one of the coolest things to come out of the whole Article 15 era is the fact that, you know, I kind of found my own individual space and able to do something that I personally had wanted my whole life. You know what I mean? I've always believed in being able to, I guess, give my story, you know what I mean? Like, I've had a pretty cool lifestyle, you know what I mean? It's been pretty interesting, but to be able to focus my energy on a specific group of individuals, and hopefully they can either learn from my mistakes or identify with my mistakes and be able to continue to see positivity at the end of, you know, light at the end of that tunnel. But then fuck, man. Like, look, man, we're given this pedestal. We're given this stage to use, you know what I mean? And I think we all use it in the way that we want to. Personally, this is where I want to be. You know what I mean? I am kind of the older dude in the group. I am the kind of the saltier guy. You know, I am the guy that's been through a lot of, you know, downs and ups and downs and ups and downs. And so if I can give my friends, my counterparts, my buddies, a life lesson from my own book, and hopefully they go and not make the same mistake I did, well, then fuck, man, please take from my fucking word and don't make the same mistake I have. And dude, it's been amazing. Like, so Texas A&M, what an amazing culture of a school that is. And I swear to you right now, just from going to that school just one weekend, I want to go to do my master's at that school because that's how fucking I drank the Kool-Aid, if you want to say. You know
really?
What I mean?
Like
that,
You're an Aggie. You're a Texas A&M Aggie right now.
If I can get in that school, dude, I swear to you, that's what I'm going to do, because of the fact, like, there's such a military focused and cultured school. You can't help it, but.
And it's a huge school. A lot of people don't realize that. It's College Station, right?
Yeah, it's College Station. It's actually, I believe, it's the biggest college football stadium in Texas. It's Kyle Stadium. I'm almost positive you can look that up. But here's the thing, man. I went there. So they've been open, I think 2004 was when the first time they opened this I think it's Military Resource Center for the veterans that are part of the Texas A&M. And they've had all the get-togethers and speeches and everything else you can think of, and they've never had a huge showing. This was the biggest showing they've ever had. It was 109 individuals there to see me, Rocco, speak. Like, that alone was humbling, man. And then to talk to the colonel, he's like, wow, man, like, you had a huge impact. Man, I never would imagine in a million years that my word, right, my life story would have an impact on individuals like it has. And I don't see how mine's any significant than any other, but besides the fact that, like, you know, we became a successful company, man, by just being driven, by using what the military has given us and continuing driving forward. It's been crazy.
No, it's amazing. And the reaction online, like, I don't want to say that I think you found your true calling, but I kind of think you have. Like, people love you, and you're an important voice in the community. And the fact that you're great at it, just you're a natural great speaker and a leader. It says a lot about who you are. And I have a feeling in your future there'll be a lot more if you choose that to be your path. But that's just me.
Yeah, man, dude. I'm always willing to. Anytime anyone asks me if I'm available, I'll go speak. That's something that I definitely is passion. It's a passion on.
Yeah, and I know we end a lot of our shows with songs or skits, but at the end of this show tonight, we're actually going to end with one of your speeches. And where was that from, by the way?
Oh, man. So you know what that came from? So that's going to be, it's called Look in the Mirror. And that came from, some lady calls me, says, hey, I want to start a nonprofit. And I was like, oh, here we go. Another veteran nonprofit. That's odd. And so I kind of gave her the spiel. And at the end I said, you know what? I'm sorry. That wasn't meant for you. I was just kind of venting. You know, if you need help, if you need any more questions and answers, you know, I'll give it to you, whatever, just give me a call notes on. She goes, no, that was great. I really appreciate your insight. And then I never saw it that way. And so I turned around and just turned on my phone and went to the voice memo thing and just started recording. And I went on this 9-minute, I believe it is, emotional rant about the veteran space, man, and some of the things that the way we view things, you know. And one thing I want to say before that, I didn't add to that I want to add now, is that you're going to hear me talk about 22. You're going to hear me talk about veteran transition. You're going to hear me talk about veteran nonprofits. You're going to hear me talk about all these things in this 9-minute rant. And it's like I was very passionate about, because I'm so involved in this space and I see the faults and I see the goods and the bads. And I see some of the things that we do as veterans, man. We're so passionate about our mission here to help other veterans. And that I think we've almost hurt ourselves by being oversaturating our own space. And so I would take this. This is one thing I want to say before you listen to that 9-minute rant. I would say this. There's something I wish I could add to it. And I did. And I'm not going to add to it now. We focus on these 22 veterans a day, 22 veterans a day. I would love for you guys that are listening to look into the most successful 22 veterans. Look for the most successful 22 veterans you can find and see what the fuck they did in their life and follow that path. Okay? Follow the fuck they did. Okay? Instead of focusing on the negativity of our culture, let's focus on the positivity, man. Focus on what fucking Nick Palmisano has done. Right? There's more guys more successful than Nick Palmisano, but I'm saying just the first guy coming out of my head, like, what the fuck did that guy do to be in the position he is now? Focus on Matt. Ask him a million questions. Focus on what Matt Best and Jared Taylor have done to be in the position they are today. And ask him, like, what steps did you take? Why are we asking about this negativity? Start fucking picking the brains of the success. Successful individuals in their space, man, and fucking follow that lead. Let's lead from the front. All you entrepreneurs, all you successful veterans, lead from the front. And all you guys want to be like them, follow their lead.
Absolutely. And right after the podcast, after our Drinking Bro of the Week, which is coming up now, stay tuned for Rocco's, I wouldn't call it a rant. I would call it a motivational speech. I got a chance to listen to it. And yeah, man, I mean, everything you do is unbelievably inspiring to the community. And look, just your experiences as a dad are unbelievably it's just cool to see somebody who's as down to earth and who can talk about it for an hour like we just did tonight. And I to me personally, you know, forget the divorces and all that shit, like you're a great person, you're a great father, and you're a great mentor, and you have an important voice, and I hope you know that.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it, man. It's been a blast.
Absolutely. And for the Drinking Bros of the Week and Broettes, actually, Rocco and I wanted to dedicate this episode to our moms and dads.
Yes.
I'm first up, and to Jerry and Diane Lowry. I love you guys. You made me the person I am today. You always taught me to believe in myself and follow my dreams. And it's gone above and beyond anything I would have expected. And I love you guys if you guys are listening. Rocco?
Yeah, man. I want to obviously dedicate this to Carlos and Alice Vargas, my father, who's an undying spirit of just working his ass off for his family and never saying no when we need him. And my mother, who's always been that soft spirit, she it's like the yin and the yang in those two. And they've always been there. They've shown me what a perfect example of a family means. And they're the ones who've made me want to be the family man I am today. So I appreciate everything you guys have done. And the fact that you've told me if I've ever wanted to be anything in life, I'm going to. And it's funny because that's what I'm doing today. And so I appreciate everything you guys have done for us. And one last thing. There's a gentleman on Instagram who said, give me a shout out. And everybody told him, like, why the fuck would Rocco give me a shout out? Why? Because we're normal dudes, man. And why the fuck not? So Miguel Diaz, dude, thank you for supporting us in our drive and our passion and in the directions that we go. Continue to have faith in us, man. Because we're just normal dudes like anyone else, man. And everyone else can achieve what we've done. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Cheers, everybody. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
Thank you. Thank you for doing this, Rocco. I appreciate
it. Sure, brother.
I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to chat with me one-on-one. Stay tuned, kids. Say a motivational speech from Rocco at the end of this. So for Vincent Vargas, I am Ross Patterson. And this is a little sampling of what Vincent Vargas has been doing at Texas A&M and a lot all over the country. So here we go.
See, someone talked about today, someone called me about nonprofits, and here's my problem. I think that the veteran nonprofit world is saturated. And so the idea of if we have a million nonprofits out there, veteran nonprofits out there to help veteran suicide, right? And they all have $5, they're not helping anyone. But then if you have two or three that have millions of people that would give them $5, well, then they probably have several million that they could work with. Now, you could probably use that money towards helping veterans. But then the question goes, like, what is it? How do you help a veteran? Like, how do you help veteran suicide, right? Like, fuck the awareness, got it. Like, how do you help veteran suicide? Or what is the issue? Post-traumatic stress, TBI, what is the issue? So here's the reality of it. If you have PTSD, if you have traumatic brain injury, you need to go to counseling and you need to go to a brain clinic, okay? So the counseling can actually remove some of those bad thoughts, right? They have a thing called rapid eye movement treatment, and that will, no shit, remove the traumatic event that is stuck in your forebrain that you cannot process as a memory, and they'll get rid of that, right? They'll help get rid of that, right? And then from there, they help you adjust in other things. And then if you have traumatic brain injury, there's clinics out there that can help you repair your brain. So that's two things that most veterans that say, oh, I have PTSD and oh, I have fucking TBI, like, they don't do. And if you haven't done that, then fucking you've won. You're not helping yourself. If you can't afford it, well, then there's veteran organizations out there that can try and help. Maybe that's what we focus our money towards, right? But then besides that, then you have all these nonprofits that are like, I have one that likes to, we carve wood, and carving wood, the veterans, they find it helps with their PTSD. And then it was like, oh, well this one over here, we paint, and it helps with fucking veterans' PTSD. So like, here's the reality of it, dude. Like, everyone's fucking different, right? Everyone is fucking different, right? And so we're going to find a way that, like me, I like fitness, right? I don't do it as much as I should. But fitness does help me in my traumatic situations, right? Or deal with, I guess, get lost on my in myself so that I'm fucking happy, right? It gives me what I need to kind of escape from reality for a while and just be me, right? And that's what everyone has. So one company that does fucking wood, one company that does painting, one company that does fitness, like none of those companies are fucking helping the masses of veterans. They're just an outlet. So the reality is, if one of these small companies can reach out to one of the bigger companies, like, hey, if you pay me $1,000, I can get a veteran in here and I can teach them a class. Maybe instead of a painting one, instead of you starting, just partner up with one that you like that makes more money and that's able to help you. Because the bigger organizations need to find a way to use their money, right? They need to find a way to write a grant. So if you can partner up with a fucking bigger one who writes a grant to you so you can teach veterans, boom. Now we're not oversaturating the space of veteran nonprofits as well as GoFundMes. Because you realize we're asking for the people with the least amount of money for the most amount of money. We're asking veterans who make from 30 to 40 to 50,000 a year to GoFundMe to help veteran suicide. And you know what? We're all fucking bleeding hearts for this subject, right? We all want to help a fucking veteran somehow. We all want to stop veteran suicide. So we do everything we can. We donate everything we can to these nonprofits. And like I said, a million nonprofits is $5 ain't helping shit. We need to find a way to bring them together, work together, and use the money and the masses to bring veterans to find what their little next objective is or mission. All right? It drives me nuts. Like we're a community that has oversaturated ourselves because we all want to help. You know, I had a call today, and a lady was like, "Well, I just want to be involved. I want to help." Like, you know, we've burned ourselves already. I mean, think about the 22, right? Like, let's look further into this 22 thing, because. You know, I'm not going to tell you that I've done it. I've looked into it. I've heard from guys that are very intelligent say that, you know, the 22 number is not legit, right? Either way, why would we focus on a negative fucking outlook on a veteran than anything else? Like, my mom doesn't know anything about the veteran community besides the fact that I was in combat, right? And that veterans commit suicide, right? That's the only thing she knows. And she doesn't know that from me, right? She knows that from all the fucking main media, all the media out there. The mainstream media that's out there talks about the veteran crisis, veteran issues, and it's suicide. Everything on fucking social media, veteran 22, veteran 22, veteran 22. Like, when are we going to let go of that fucking number and realize like that? Fuck 22. Like, fuck the 20. Who gives a fuck about that 22? How do I stop 22? Here's how I stop the suicide, all right? You find these motherfuckers. They go to fucking counseling. They go to fucking brain clinics. Once they're done with that shit, then they find something that they fucking love and they fucking crush it, right? Whether it's fitness, whether it's painting, whether it's fucking hiking, I don't give a shit. They gotta stay active. They gotta be active in their own space. At what point do we just look in the mirror and realize like, hey, fucko, it's my fault I'm a pussy. It's my fault my life is falling into shit. Maybe I drink too much and that's why I lost my wife. Maybe I'm fucking focused on hanging out with my buddies is why my life is going to shit. Or maybe I drink so much I lost my fucking job. Or my health or my weight is going to shit. When do you look in the mirror and realize it's fucking you, man? When do you realize, like, I'm the one who fucked up my own life? I'm the one who needs to fucking take charge and take accountability of my own fucking actions and do something about it. When the fuck does that happen? When does the veteran community stand up and say, hey, motherfucker, look in the mirror and realize you fucked up? And how do you fix you? You wake the fuck up, you make changes in your goddamn life, and you fix it. One foot in front of the other, it ain't gonna be easy, motherfucker, but that's life, right? It's a goddamn shitty-ass road march that never ends. Fucking, you fall down, you get back up, and you keep fucking walking. Like, we have to stop thinking that we're gonna hold everyone's hand to get them a job. We're gonna hold everyone's hand to go to the fucking, to go to the doctors when they need to. We gotta stop pointing fingers at everyone around us and saying like, we're the victims, we're the victims, we're the victims. Stop pointing fingers at the fucking VA because they didn't help you. Stop pointing fingers at your fucking wife because she fucking left you. Stop pointing fingers at your job because they fucking fired you. Start looking in the goddamn mirror and realize it's you. The actions you've made have brought your life to what you see today. Okay? And here's the reality. Even if you've done everything right, life is fucking hard. It's gonna kick you in the gosh damn dick. I'll tell you right now, there's motherfuckers in the civilian world that are dealing with the same shit. They got out of college, they went to work, and then they got fired because they're fucking morons, right? Because they went out drinking, they stayed out too late fucking some strange, doing all kinds of dumb shit. They lost their wife because they were cheating. They lost their wife because she was cheating. You don't think the rest of the world deals with the same shit? They do. You just fucking trying to put a finger towards someone and blame it on someone else. Here's another thing. Transition. Don't act like it's only a veteran thing. It's a lot harder for us, don't get me wrong, because our transition is a little different. We've seen a world where life is a little bit easier. We've seen a world where I don't have to worry about shit but getting shot in the face. And you know what? That's a nice, comfortable world to live in if that's all you have to worry about. But the reality is, anyone that's coming close to 30 years old, it's going to be depressed because they're transitioning into a world where they thought they were going to be a lot farther in life than they actually are. Okay? There's a the fucking dude that goes 4 years in college and gets out is dealing with transition. Okay? The guy who played baseball his whole fucking life and fucking the whole thing got swept out from under him because of whatever reason, injuries or whatever the case, he's dealing with transition. Every motherfucker in this goddamn world has some kind of point in their life where they're dealing with transition. After dealing with a breakup. Just everything in life. People deal with transition. So why the fuck are we acting like the victims if we're the only ones that have to transition? Our transition is a little harder, yes, but it's still a fucking transition. It's life, people. We're living life. And you're fucking trying to blame everyone else in this goddamn world. I would like for the veteran community to stand up and finally look in the goddamn mirror and start blaming yourself. And when you realize, yeah, you're the one who fucked up, take credit for it. Yep, that's me. I fucked up. Well, now, how do I start putting the pieces back together? Let me fix my life and get ready for it to get fucked up again. Because that's life. It's nothing but fucking success, failure, success, failure, success, failure, 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 success, failure. So get the fuck over it. This life ain't easy. It's a beautiful thing, though. It's a beautiful thing when you figure out what you like to do. It's a beautiful thing when you wake up and say, hey, I'm waking up every day knowing that this life right now is what I've created for myself. I'm a self-made motherfucker. And if life comes to kick me in the nuts, I'm gonna brush myself off and I'm gonna get back up again, one foot in front of the other, motherfuckers. Look in the mirror, bitch. Start blaming yourself.